just name you the owners of the Federal Reserve, because who knows, maybe you'll be interested in them. There are three owners in the United States of the Federal Reserve: Rockefeller, Goldman Sachs, and the Lehman Brothers. There are five owners of the Federal Reserve overseas: the Rothschilds, Lazard Brothers, Israel Moses Schiff, Kuhn and Loeb, and the Warburgs. Those names all seem to come from a single entity. You can see why raising the price of oil so that the money would be invested in American banks, so that fractionalized banking would allow a 60-to-1 dispersal of loans, which are all interest-bearing, of course, and a lot of it goes back to protect the interest in Israel, very frankly. Now, let's get back to things that I personally know about. Harari shows up in 1975. We follow him very closely because he is the Mossad's chief agent in Mexico City. So my job is to keep an eye on him. He has a plan. Number one, Manuel Antonio Noriega wants sophisticated surveillance devices from the National Security Agency and the CIA. But we won't give it to him because the technology is forbidden for overseas. But we give it to Israel. And so Michael Herrera in 75 came in and sat down with Manuel Antonio Noriega and said, "You want these sophisticated surveillance devices? You got them." And so he gave them to Manuel Noriega. This ingratiated him, and he became very close compadres. The next thing you know, they, meaning Torrijos, because Omar Torrijos was the dictator until Harari and the CIA helped Manuel Noriega to kill him. And then as soon as Omar was gone, Noriega was the dictator. They made Michael Harari their ambassador from Panama to Israel. Michael Harari is an Israeli. He's come, and he now is their brother, and they say, "We love you so much, Michael, we're going to send you back as our personal emissary, as our ambassador to Israel." This is nice and cozy, is it not? Here's the real deal. Michael Harari came in with a plan to start a cocaine cartel that would use the natural coca from Bolivia and from Colombia, and they would transport it into the United States, and the money would be laundered through the banks controlled by Manuel Noriega in Panama. And so this began. The United States Army was called upon in 1975 to provide watchtowers, as they were called. The operation was called Watchtower. There was a low-level navigation point established near Bogota, Colombia, one near Turbo, Colombia, which is on the border of Panama, and one near Albrook Army Airfield on the Pacific side of the Panama Canal Zone. About a little more than one flight a day, the flights averaged about 40 flights a month, came out of Bogota. Now, why did we need these navigational towers? Because the flights flew at night at low level so that they were underneath the radar mask. And therefore you had to have army guys out there because they had to man the towers. And nobody knew about it, not even our Sink South, our Commander-in-Chief Southern Command, because they were underneath the radar mask. They landed at Albrook Army Airfield. Manuel Noriega, Michael Harari were there. The cocaine was taken off. It went through the mafioso cartel, and the money was laundered through the banks in Panama, and the Mossad got their cut, and the CIA got its cut, and Manuel Noriega, he got a little something too. Manuel right now is going through, if he hasn't already completed them, the SEPA hearings. What did Manuel say about 3 months before we sent 22,000 paratroops down to get him? He said, quote, "I have George Bush by the quijones." Why did he say that? Because George Bush was head of the CIA in 1976 when all of this was going on. And George Bush had Manuel Noriega come to Washington, D.C., and he stayed with the Deputy Director of Central Intelligence. And George Bush met with him, both in the Panama Embassy as well as at the CIA headquarters, as well as at the home of his deputy. Would you say that Manuel Noriega had George Bush? There are any Quijones there? I would say he probably does. Why aren't you going to hear about it? Because what happened? Well, in 1976, my best friend, as a matter of fact, Bo Baker, was the commander of the first Watchtower mission in December of 1975. He came to me, he stayed with me. He said, Bo, where's trouble? We are doing something very fishy here. These CIA craft coming back from Bogota are loaded with drugs, and Manuel Noriega is receiving them. He said, I think it's a little weird. We began our investigation and determined that it was true. We were aiding and abetting a narco-terrorist organization. And so, my job, unconventional warfare. I targeted Manuel Noriega with one of my A-teams. And, interestingly enough, I didn't receive a coded message that would normally come through electronic means, but I got a visit by the Chief of Military Intelligence. I know the terms are contradictory, but that's his title. He is the Assistant Chief of Staff, United States Army for Intelligence. And his name was Harold Aaron, and he landed, he's a two-star general, and he said to me in Task Force Hawk, which is a super secret communication site in Panama, he said, Bo, you keep your hands off of Manuel Noriega. He has, this is all quote, he has immense value at the highest levels. Well, I'm hard-headed, if you'll recall, and I said, how could a drug smuggler and a communist, because he's a close friend of Castro, have any value to anybody? He said, Bo, the CIA has him on the payroll, making as much as the president. Remember what I told you? You don't pay agents money. You have to give them some expenses. We were given Manuel Noriega $200,000 a year as a retainer, not counting the literal tens and hundreds of millions that he was scraping off the top for the drugs. Well, being a good soldier, ask not why, just do or die, I did not eliminate Manuel Noriega with prejudice, but that's okay because 22,000 paratroops went down there Christmas last, if you'll remember, and in billions of dollars worth of damage and thousands of lives, they brought Manuel Noriega to justice. And he sits in Miami as a four-star general, self-appointed, and he is a courted official prisoner of war status. Remember, he declared war on the United States. Anybody declares war on the United States has got a sure thing going. Everybody, look at Japan and Germany and all the rest of them, they're doing great. They lose the war, they win the peace. Manuel Noriega certainly lost the war, but he is there at your expense. And all of you wait to hear the revelations that will come from Manuel Noriega in his trial. Forget it. There's a thing called the CIPA. You probably never heard of it. Classified Information Procedures Act. I know all about it because they used it on me. And I knew when they brought Manuel Noriega out that he was going to be very surprised that his lawyers were, because it's called the CIA Act and it's never used. I may have been, my lawyer found two other cases in file history where this CIPA had been used before they imposed it on me. And then the next guy was Ollie North, and now Manuel Noriega. So we're a very exclusive little group. The CIPA says you cannot present one word of testimony, not one witness, not one document, that isn't in a closed secret hearing gone over by the government first. You literally have a mock trial in front of the judge with no jury and no people, where the government can cross-examine you as much as they want. And then the government tells the judge what cannot be said in open court because it would prejudice national security. What is national security a synonym for? Cover-up in 1990, sure as heck is. So do you think, because Manuel Noriega for this last couple of weeks has been going through his CIPA, Do you think he's going to be able to tell his relationship with George Bush in open court? Oh, that would prejudice national security, I'm sure. So you will never hear it. But I'm telling you what the truth is, and I'm telling you why George Bush is right now fearful of some things that are going on. It's not just because of Operation Watchtower and Manuel Noriega, but there are other things in his closet. For one thing, maybe you should know, and you might know a little, but let me tell you a little more, possibly, is George Bush is a member of the Skull and Bones. Why is this important? Well, let's go back, if you will bear with me. That's the trouble with getting an intelligence officer to give you a briefing, because we use these historical facts in order to set the stage for our projections in the future. Go all the back with me to the time when we were fighting for our revolution in 1776. What else was going on while we were fighting for our revolution? Over in Europe, there was a guy named Adam Weishaupt. He created a thing called the Illuminati. The purpose was to, first of all, just overthrow Bavaria. And then it was to overthrow Europe. An act of God revealed all of this, because one of his messengers was riding with the dispatches and the plans and was struck by lightning. And the police said, "My gosh, look at this." And so they outlawed the Illuminati. That does not mean it went away. It just went underground deeper. And it's interesting because we see that in the same period of time, we had a man named Rothschild, and others will tell you about this, but very quickly, Rothschild's point of view was, if I control the currency and the credit, I don't care who controls the government, I will rule the destiny of the people. And so he sent his five sons to all of the major capitals of Europe, from which they created national banks, and they loaned money so that each country could fight itself and its enemies. And, of course, Rothschild didn't care who won. But then America began emerging after 1776, and he saw, whoops, this is going to become the most powerful nation on the face of the earth. We must break its back, and his weapon is economics. Because if we can break the back of America economically, get them on their knees, then we don't care who rules the government. We rule the people. And so he began. Now, there was in about 1805 a guy by the name of George Wilhelm Hegel. Why is he important? You've heard of Marx, haven't you? You've heard of Hitler. Hegel was their instructor. Hegel was a professor in the University of Berlin. And he, if you look in your encyclopedia, you'll see George, without an E, Hegel. And he is known for Hegelism. And Marx was his student. And here was his theory. He said, only the elite can rule. All people must and can be controlled. If they are not, there is chaos. Therefore, the elite must rule. The state must always be supreme over the people. And Marx, on the left side, started what we know as communism. And on the right side, Adolf Hitler had fascism. But aren't they both Hegelism? Because the state is supreme and the people are beneath it. And it was Hegel's school that you have a thesis, you have an antithesis, so that you have a synthesis. And that, friends, is known as the New World Order. And is it a coincidence that in 1990, the great Soviet threat, the rising tide, the tentacles of communism, all of a sudden go belly up, and Mikhail Gorbachev is man of the decade. Nobel Peace Prize winner last year. How many trillions of dollars have we spent in order to hold off this hated enemy? When are we going to wake up and see what this is really all about? This guy Hegel, I don't think, has any idea the seeds he planted. Because in the minds of the people like Rothschild and others, it said, the elite are going to rule. All people can and must be controlled. We're going to do it economically. We'll set nations against themselves. They will owe huge debts to us, the bankers. In 1865, what happened? We had a major war, 1861 to 1865. President Abraham Lincoln was offered by the Rothschilds funding a mere 20 to 30% interest. Lincoln said to stick it up your kilt. He created an economy called greenbacks. No gold, no silver, but no debt. Lincoln was killed. He said you could print $450 million. You know why this is kind of interesting? Because another guy said you could print $4.5 billion in non-interest-bearing currency. Who was that? John Fitzgerald Kennedy signed an administrative directive, a presidential directive that said, I am authorizing the printing and distribution of $4.5 billion in Federal Reserve, not Federal Reserve, but federal notes, non-interest-bearing.
United States notes.
Yep, specifically United States notes. The interesting point is, not only was it in the same dimensions, but they were both killed, of course. Because this interacts in a wrong way with the direction the New World Order is heading. So George Bush, how does he come into it? Because in 1832, through the Illuminati and through the Hegelism schools, there was a secret society created in Berlin, known as the Skull and Bones. Now, how many of you guys here went to college? How many of you in California? Because, see, California's pretty radical. If you went to college in California and you were part of a fraternity, you probably had to swallow a goldfish. Maybe you swallowed an oyster and they pulled it back up, because that's the way college kids do. When you join the Skull and Bones, you are placed in a sarcophagus naked, and you are born again in the tomb. This doesn't sound very intelligent to me. 15 elitists are chosen every year to be initiated into the Skull and Bones. George Bush was initiated into the Skull and Bones in 1948. Now, this happens at Yale. And so people say, well, Bo, it's just a fraternity. How come that you don't join it until you're in your senior year? And you are knighted in your senior year, but once you graduate, you became a patriarch of the Skull and Bones. Every year you're called upon. Their one purpose is to promote each other. I'm going to have questions now in just a minute.
Just one thing, Senator John Kerry.
Thank you. You TC, steal a little of my thunder here. I want to bring it up later, because John Kerry, point we just made, isn't he a wonderful young man? John Kerry is a Vietnam veteran. John Kerry is starting to hold hearings about our prisoners of war. He's going to get to the bottom of it. You know what's interesting? John Kerry is a member of the Skull and Bones. I wrote John Kerry a letter yesterday. I almost didn't do it, but I know a lot about what's going on with our prisoners of war. I've been behind communist lines 10 times since 82. All the photographs you've been seeing, we've been dealing with all these agents. We know the truth behind the photographs and the agents and the prisoners of war. So I wrote a letter to John Kerry yesterday, and I said, John Kerry, I'm here to help you if you really want to get to the bottom of the prisoner of war issue. I want you to call Admiral Jerry O. Tuttle. He knows the truth. He briefed the president. He's seen the satellite photographs that show American prisoners of war in captivity. And I gave him continued lists of actual smoking gun cases. Now, in the very end, I said, I have a little concern because of a fraternity that you share with George Bush, known as the Skull and Bones. How will this affect your objectivity in this investigation? What do you think I'm going to get back from John Kerry? I put that in as the last sentence, because you see, if you even mention the Skull and Bones, they are supposed to get up instantly and walk away and leave, because it is a secret society. Well, most recently, how are we even talking about George Bush here? Because it was in, and here's where I first saw it. This is not Time Magazine. This is U.S. News and World Report. It's the other people. But they have a little thing here that says, read my code. And up here it says, Bush speak. I prefer to call anything George Bush says, Bush lip. It is better than another four-letter word that I would prefer to use as a paratrooper and an Army Ranger, but Bush lip will suffice. I think it's a new word that could be created to mean anything that was absolutely absurd and ridiculous.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking consensus or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with voracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
That comes from politics in this decade. It says here that George was up at Kitty Bunkport coming back, and one of his news friends asked him, "Oh, Mr. President, do we have anything new on the Iraqi situation?" And George recognized him as a bonesman and said, "Seven," and walked on. Well, some of the guys said, "What is this seven?" And the guy said, well, he saw he was trapped. He said, "Listen, that's skull and bones talk. Each year there are 15 that are brought in. And seven is a negative way of answering because that's a minority. If Bush would have said eight, then I would have known that he did have new information." He said, "Oh, it's of interest, by the way, that George Bush was invited to New Haven, to the tomb, and he couldn't go because you can't enter unless your Secret Service men are also bonesmen. And so he had to turn them down. He was fined $3.22. And so the news people said, "What is this 322? Why $3.22? And the guy said, "Oh, that's secret. I can't say, other than to tell you it means good luck." Well, I'll tell you what 322 means. 1832 is when the Berlin Society was formed. So that is the 3-2. And New Haven was the second chapter. The first chapter is in Berlin. New Haven, United States, is chapter 2, therefore 3-2-2. Is that good luck? That is a school of Hegelism. That is a school of elitists who are sworn to each other to perpetuate their own fame and fortune. I don't think so. A lot of people, well, by the way, a little history on Skull and Bones. 1917, there was a fellow named Prescott Bush, George Bush's dad. He was a Skull and Bonesman. You know who he went to work for when he got out of the Skull and Bones? Not out of it, but out of Yale? He went to work for Brown Brothers Harriman, a Rothschild banking agency. Brown Brothers and Harriman are Skull and Bonesers. You know who also was Skull and Bones? How about Harry Luce? Who's that guy? Owns Time Magazine. Aha, Skull and Bones. And William Buckley, you see him all the time. Have you read my National Review? Perhaps you've seen me on television or read some of my articles. He is Skull and Bones. Don't ever expect any of these people to do anything other than promote their own society. Now, a lot of people say, listen, Bo, we've got this thing targeted. We know that the Council on Foreign Relations is the real booger here. There are 3,000 members of the Council on Foreign Relations. One of my best friends is a member of Council on Foreign Relations. They are not the bullseye. They are not the center of the web. These are people who are willing to do anything that the insiders want, because when my best friend was inducted into the Council on Foreign Relations, he showed me a letter. The letter said, would you join the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the National Security Advisor, in charting the course of this nation over the coming decades? He was so proud his buttons almost popped off. What would you say if you got something like that in the mail? He could not wait to write in his application and says, I will join the Secretary of State in charting the course of the nation. Do you think that when they want something done by him and they write him a little note, says, oh, by the way, Joe, we want you to do this. Do you think he's going to do it? In a heartbeat. He'll fall on his bayonet. He's so proud. But they are not the inter sanctum. What about the hated trilateralist? There are 300 members of the Trilateral Commission, Japanese, European, and American. Are they the insiders? Not 300. But who else are Skull and Bonesers? The Rockefellers? Yes. And they have, again, their sister fraternity on the other side of the ocean. I think, remember, I just named you 8 entities. Why don't I call them people? Because they are families. They are a living thing. I honestly believe that there is a conspiracy. If you don't believe there's a conspiracy, get your head out of rectal defilade, get it up where you can see, because your posterior makes an excellent target. Your pockets are getting lighter. On television, about California, this morning in the news, there's nothing but all of the unemployment and how people are losing their jobs everywhere. 800,000 businesses closed their doors this last May. 400 banks have failed in the last 6 months. It is exciting, friends, because the New World Order is upon us. The reason it's exciting is because I have this feeling. I have intelligence. I have knowledge that in the end, we are going to win this thing. Yes. Now, I don't know exactly how we do it. We do win. And I know that the reason I know we're going to win is because if you're on target, how do you know it? You're catching a lot of flack. If you aren't catching flack, you ain't over target. I really honestly didn't know that we had George Bush by the cojones. But you know something? Let me just tell you what happened. In 1989, I was tried, and I was acquitted. But before that, in 86, I was training with Mujahideen Afghan Freedom Fighters. What were you doing in 86? I mean, you say, Bo, good grief. This is my life. My life's a little different. I've been...
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited. So take a breath, head to aroutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at aroutfitting.com.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigraLeaf. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigraLeaf migraine formula. MigraLeaf is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigraLeaf for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354, or visit MIG911.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search.
Behind this veil. So when I've been training Mujahideen, it is as natural for me as it probably is for you to be visiting the 7-Eleven. I don't go to the 7-Eleven. I live so far out in the country, as a matter of fact, when we go hunting, we got to drive towards town. I got a little airstrip that the airplane sets on. It's right in the front yard. It's my dream. It is my wife's nightmare. There's no pantyhose for 50 miles, literally. It's serious. We live out that far from Lost Wages. So we're training Mujahideen, Afghan freedom fighters, and it seems right to me. And when we're not doing that, we're over in Southeast Asia, either tracing or preparing to rescue U.S. prisoners of war. It's what I've done since 79, when I put on the suit as an intelligence agent of ISA. And we get a call from the National Security Council, and it's Tom Harvey. And this is no big deal, because he's a contact that I know well in NSC. And he says, Bo, we have a mission for you. Come to Washington. So we go, and Tom Harvey says, the vice president has it on good authority that Khun Sa, the overlord in Burma, is holding American prisoners. Who was the vice president in 86? George Bush. And no U.S. government agent had ever been able to go in the Golden Triangle and come out alive. And they wanted to know if I'd go in there. Do you think somebody's trying to get rid of me? Khun Sa drew and quartered his men between horses, the White House report said. He killed his barber because he gave him a bad haircut. There was all kinds of nasty reports. But if there was a live prisoner of war even possible, it's worth the risk. Always has been, always will to me, as long as God allows me to stand upright. And so we went. Bottom line is, Kunsaw had no prisoners, but he wanted a message on video taken to the president. Well, we're there, and we're cranking away, and he says, tell President Reagan that I will eliminate all of the heroin from the Golden Triangle. Now, that was 600 tons in 1986. Here is the L.A. Times in 1991, and the L.A. Times, just let me show now, how much was it in 86? Test question. See if you're listening. 600 tons. Listen to this. According to the U.S. government's International Narcotics Control Strategy Report, issued in March, the Golden Triangle produced 3,050 tons. Is that good business? That's five times, is it not? Isn't that five times? Five times 600 equals 3,000. That's tons, metric tons, 2,200 pounds. Business is good, isn't it? In 86, Kunsaw said, I'll stop every ounce. And he said, I will reveal every U.S. government official who's been my best customer for more than 20 years. Was this good news? We had no prisoners, but yet who was leading the charge in the war on drugs in 1986? George Bush had been appointed by the president. I said, and it was George Bush's office that had sent us to Burma so kindly. And so I rushed back with three videotapes and gave them to the White House just before Christmas of 1986. Did they give me an attaboy? No. You already know the answer to that. I was told you erase and forget. Well, something didn't sound right. This plate in the back of my head started heating up, and I said, this isn't right. And so we went back to Burma, and Kunsaw named the U.S. government officials, and one of them just happened to be a high-level official appointed by George Bush, who was in charge of bringing home the prisoners of war. His name was Richard Armitage. He was the Assistant Secretary of Defense. And right on videotape that you can see, the same tape we turned over to the White House, there is Kunsaw saying he is the bag man for the government operation. He deals with the banks in Australia. Well, who is Kunsaw? He is the Gorbachev of heroin. If you want to reduce missiles, you talk to Gorby. If you want to reduce heroin, you better talk to Kunsaw. That's where it comes from. How come we weren't talking to Kunsaw? It told me then why we had failed on four occasions to bring home American prisoners of war. It should tell you now why the government is going to try to completely cover up this whole new interest in MIAs and POWs. If Dick Armitage is the bag man for a government drug operation, and Kunsaw named the others, you can see it on the videotape, I haven't got time to give you the list, then do we want prisoners to come home? Because if prisoners come home, we're going to investigate what bureaucrats were responsible and what took them so long to get them home. And then what's going to come out? It's going to come out that the bureaucrats responsible were not trying to bring home prisoners, but rather were misusing their office of special trust and confidence in order to run drugs. What better office to run drugs than the one responsible for bringing home prisoners? Because this office goes to all of the agents. It goes to all of the deepest, darkest places of communism. It talks to all of the crooks saying, how about our prisoners? Can we get them out? Isn't that kind of a nice vehicle for also running drugs? And apparently that's exactly what happened, because Armitage didn't start this in 1986. Armitage had been associated with the CIA since 1973, and the Phoenix program, and all that's still going on today. Now, when we brought all this back, I was told, if you don't erase and forget, you will serve 15 years as a felon. I was told, on the other hand, if you will cooperate, we will give you a job as a government contractor in Washington, D.C. My wife comes from D.C. Mama is there. It's a great attraction for Washington. And your children deserve this. No one wants to hurt a war hero. Don't make the government go drama. These are all quotes. The fact is that we will bury you. There will be, quote, aggravated charges and hostile witnesses. Just cooperate, Bo. Erase and forget. Well, what would you have done? I'm hard-headed. See, you may not be able to take a bullet in the back of the head like I did. And so, remembering my oath of allegiance, I told them to stick it up their kilt. And sure enough, they tried to keep their promise. But here's what I want to share with you. We are not a nation of sheep. We are a nation of, by, and for the people. I have perfect confidence in the justice system. I have no confidence in the Justice Department. Edwin Meese one day is chief of staff of the White House. The next day he's investigating himself as attorney general. And the rat is guarding the cheese. But what happened? Let me tell you how this population of America can take this nation back anytime it wants, passively, if not directly. In Oklahoma, the charge against me was training the Mujahideen, the Afghan freedom fighters. The grand jury failed to indict. Now, what happens there? The U.S. attorney has no choice. How come a bunch of dirt farmers from Oklahoma would fail to indict? You can indict a stick. The great senator from Utah, Orrin Hatch, said so. There's no defense. It's only the U.S. attorney. And you know, the U.S. attorney now can lie about you before the grand jury and not be held liable about it. He can tell the grand jury anything and not be held liable. That's the law. There was a guy, because I'm not a person to wonder what happened or wait. As soon as I got a letter from the U.S. attorney of the state of Oklahoma that says, you are the target of our grand jury indictment, we intend to request the maximum penalty, which is 5 years. I didn't wait around. They didn't invite me to appear. I went to Oklahoma. I didn't know what I was going to do. But you see, God works in strange and mysterious ways. Something told me, you go to Oklahoma and I'll open a door. When I got to Oklahoma, I stayed with a friend, and you know, a guy just stopped by that night who happened to be a disc jockey on KJIL. Call sign letters for Jesus is Lord. And he said, Bo, if you will come down to the station right now and record your story about this Afghan fighting and how the State Department set it up, I'll play it over and over on KJIL instead of the religious music. Those old farmers out there, yeah, those old farmers out there chugging along. You see, the wonderful thing about miracles is they're so damned unpredictable. You don't know how you're going to win, but somehow you do if what you're doing is right. And in that case, the U.S. attorney could do nothing. The grand jury just said no. So then in California, down in L.A., they were going to indict me. I'm guilty of all these things, by the way. They were going to indict me for violation of the Neutrality Act. 10 times I'd been behind communist lines, never had permission, in search of prisoners of war. So that is violation of Neutrality Act. It's okay when you're working for the agency, but when you cross them, all of a sudden it is now time that you are brought before the jury and you're tried. God be praised. The little people are for us. There's a guy by the name of Freddie Rusty Capps, who's special agent in charge in Los Angeles. Freddie Capps went to Dwight Moore. Dwight Moore is the U.S. attorney down there, and he said, Dwight, Bo Greitz is an active agent of the United States Intelligence Agency. And he said, he won't tell me exactly who he works for, but the CIA has sent me messages to give him. I have investigated things that he has said. And he said, the defense intelligence, he denies it all, but I know that it's there because the CIA tells me it is. So Dwight Moore said, oh, I'm not getting caught between some kind of an agency tug of war. So he dropped the charges. Then they indicted me in Las Vegas for misuse of a passport. It is a weenie charge. It's an insult. 30 years I've been doing dirty tricks against the enemy, and all they can get me for is using a false passport. I am guilty. I've used them all of my adult life. And I was indicted. But here's the wonderful thing. Remember this. The grand jury, not one patriot can ever be brought to trial if the grand jury says no. And in this case, I was acquitted. What is most, as a matter of fact, after the trial is over, the first time you can touch the jury, when the trial was over, two ladies came up to me and said, Bo, you were in our prayers every day. Two real hulky guys came up and said, Colonel, go get them. Now, that was a jury of peers. I was, figuratively, bulletproof before that jury. The U.S. attorney, talk about how God works in strange and marvelous ways, you'll see it right on the videotape. The U.S. attorney steps out onto the Foley Federal Building steps, the television is there, wanting to know why, after 2 years of prosecutorial delays, they had no case, and I was acquitted. And he says, quote, this is not some underling, this is the U.S. attorney. By the way, the chief deputy was named L.J. O'Neill. That may not ring a bell, but how about Country Joe and the Fish? And if that doesn't ring a bell, then one, two, three, four, what are we fighting for? It was one of the best songs in the Vietnam War. Be the first one on your block to have your son come home in a box. We loved it. We sang it over in Vietnam all the time. L.J. O'Neill turned out to be the manager of Country Joe and the Fish. I didn't know it, but when the media got a hold of the Fish and said, what would we say if you told you your boss was now a deputy chief U.S. prosecutor? They said, no. L.J. was too good of an acid head. He'd never do something like that. So L.J. was history. And then the U.S. attorney stepped out and literally said, quote, you can see him, his head is right there, because he was on television that night, and thank God for the Japanese and their VCR. I just recorded it. He said, when they said, why were you doing this? He said, quote, George Bush called me up and told me to get Bo Grice. And a young reporter said, are you denying that? Is that what you're saying? And Bill Maddox said, quote, no, what I'm saying is, George Bush called me up and told me to get Bo Grice. Is that manna from heaven? I recorded that, and I sent that to George Bush with a little yellow stickum right on the top of it. And it said, if you did this, I think you did wrong. You subverted the justice system. If you didn't, you got trouble with your U.S. attorney. He's lying about you. They fired the U.S. attorney. We still do not have a permanent U.S. attorney. The current U.S. attorney in Nevada is being investigated for arson fraud. So if you know a good lawyer who's looking for a job, you think he can stand muster, send him to Nevada. The point I'm trying to make is that you don't have to be afraid of the government. As a citizen, there's not one law that any idiot in Congress can pass that has any teeth unless the grand jury and the jury gives it force. That's how they did away with the Runaway Slave Act. Now, a lot of terrible, let me kind of wrap it up because I want time for some questions, and then tonight we'll have a full-blown question and answer period. Some things maybe you've been wondering about, and first of all, this prisoner of war thing. There are live prisoners of war. There's no question about it. I want to give you the ammunition. Right here is the best thing that's happened to America other than bringing home prisoners of war alive. This is dated the 23rd of May, 1991. Please write this down. You need this as ammunition. 23rd of May, 1991. It is from the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee. It is called an examination of U.S. policy toward prisoners of war. Now, you need that because when you call up whoever it is you have elected or who's standing in for somebody you've elected in the great state of California, you need to cite this. You need to say, reference the U.S. Senate study on prisoners of war dated 23 May, 1991. Here's what this says. This study says, we want to collect any questions. This study says, number one, that the Soviets, this is very important, the Soviets in World War II liberated over 20,000 Americans. Let's get the numbers right. 20,000. Americans that were being held by the Germans on the Eastern Front. But they did not repatriate them. This Senate study says They took the American prisoners of war back and put them in KGB gulags and wanted $6 billion in 1945 dollars from the United States in war aid for the return. But we didn't give it to them. So they kept the 20,000 Americans. This study says that in Korea, there were upwards of 5,000 Americans who put on a uniform, who were captured, that were sent through Manchuria into the Soviet gulags. In 1953, there was a guy by the name of John Noble. He escaped from the gulags, and he said, "I was being held with 3,000 Americans from World War II and Korea in the gulags of the KGB. This study says that hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans were sent from Southeast Asia into the KGB gulags. In 1975, a man by the name of George Rizu, a Romanian, escaped from the gulags. He said, "I was personally held with 900 Americans from World War II, Korea, and Vietnam." Now, why is this exciting? Because paper does nothing. It's exciting because the U.S. Senate has finally said it. And it's exciting because this coming week, George Bush meets with Mikhail Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev wants $100 billion. And George Bush has said it's in our best national interest to help him. Here is the message, friends. Please, Monday, I know, write it down if you don't mind. Monday, if you call your senator or your representative or the White House before 8 o'clock. Well, what time is it in Washington when it's 8 o'clock here? It's 11. They're just getting to work about that time, so they should be there to receive your phone call. At 7:30 in the morning here, before you go to work, it only costs you a quarter. Call your senator, call your elected representative, and say this: not one dime to Mikhail Gorbachev until he accounts for our prisoners of war.
Or he has access to the information, does he not? If he knows something that Mikhail Gorbachev asked him for, he was not going to get one thin dime from America unless he returned American prisoners of war and accounted for those who died in captivity. We'd have it all before Christmas. That's why the Soviets hold them, so that they can be used only when needed as blue-chip training stamps. The White House opinion poll number is 202. That's Washington, D.C., so if you forget it, no problem, it's 202. 456-1111. And I can never forget that number. I'm going to come back here 3 years now, sir. If America's still alive, sir, what is it you say? 202-456-1111. George Bush may not answer the phone as I would be thankful, but someone will. You tell them, please, reference the U.S. Senate study, May 23, 1991, Mikhail Gorbachev gets not one dime until that former head of the KGB accounts for all our living prisoners of war and our missing in action. If enough of you do it, I was chief of congressional relations in the Pentagon. I'm here to tell you, politicians see the light when they feel the heat, where you're building the fire. That is their solution. The motto in Washington is do nothing, and you do nothing well. Now, a little peep of that before I give you my bet and an answer to that. Now, I want to just pause this to you, because I've been giving you these vignettes about crimes and about prisoners of war and about burning government and stolen bombs. We need something else. I've won government assassination bombs. We have some marvelous weapons. These women aside, chooses to use cash and his new signature. Somebody grabs Gavin, you've got a heart attack, and all the cash is better than aside. We want to call it our Western heritage to use bullets. We don't have to be silver bullets, but we have gas projectiles that shoot for shots. We don't use silencers. That's all the Hollywood stuff. We use bullets that are silent. The bullets are making noise. We have atomic bombs, literally that fit into briefcases. I used to be a little worker in the 60s and even in the 50s. We had a bomb that looked like Gunnlocker with this miniature Batman installed. And all the chest change that all this, it's in the notebook and is out now in the literature after this time. And it's kind of weird about that. The book is entitled Cold Files and Conspiracy from JFK to George Bush, Call to Serve. And it's every one of my unique experiences as an operative behind the video concerning the Kennedy assassination all the way up to when I just very quickly present this with you. What did the scientist have one of his conspiracy theories? Who was Jimmy Carter? He won Watch My Mind. Nobody knew of the Watch My Mind TV show. Nobody could guess he was a governor of Georgia. But who runs Time Life magazine? Mr. Reese, Golden Days. Jimmy Carter was a trilateralist and David Rockefeller. They put his face on the cover twice of Time magazine. And Jimmy Carter was the president. What was Jimmy Carter's job for the Rockefeller? One, to keep away the Panama Canal and the atomic bomb that was used in the book. Secondly, was to fractionalize banking with Paul Volcker when we would actually be cut down to our knees with this 1-to-60 ratio. Okay, Jimmy Carter was a Democrat. I was in Vietnam, I voted for a guy named Wallace. Because of all the chances I've had, I had a spot in the Wallace head as his vice president of Canada, Curtis LeMay. Strategic, better command chief. I knew now I had a spot in the Queen Fair of Lackland. And Wallace then said something. He said, quote, "Not a dime's worth of difference between a Democrat and a Republican." Wallace was giving his prophecy. No one listening, Jimmy Carter was a Democrat. Now what happens? We have JFK, let's remember him. But when JFK is supposed to win the election, I was a young second lieutenant. I voted for Nixon. Nixon had been Eisenhower's vice president for 8 years. He had all the experience. Who's this Catholic over here? We couldn't vote for him. Great thought, JFK. Had the mafia on his side because of Sam Giancana cheating in Chicago when he had the vote and a half. JFK won by the slimmest margin ever. And all of a sudden, this outsider, because certainly his dad was an insider, but JFK being young, I think, in a free mind, he decided, by golly, he was going to import the incest. He was going to be Attorney General, his very own brother. Awful how far it was. But they started inviting the mafia at 10-to-1 ratio before. All of a sudden, it was civil rights, and we're talking about Martin Luther King. Next thing you know, they authorized a plan. U.S. notes with no kind of debt at Edmonds established the Federal Reserve. He was going to pull us out of Vietnam. He was going to destroy the CIA and split it into 1,000 pieces. He was not going to go back into Cuba for Pepsi, Cola, and all the sugar in the world and laughing or anybody else. He had to go. And he went. And now let's just follow the progression of that. And we had Tricky Dick. Tricky Dick was never an insider. But famous, Agnew, remember him? Former governor of Maryland. Why did he resign? There was some implication, never proven. Just implication he had some nefarious dealing with contractors as governor. Who in the hell doesn't? That's why he became governor, so he could get rich over these contractors. That's my understanding of the game. But Agnew resigned, didn't he? And then we had Watergate. I told you when I first began, the very first schools I went to was City Park and Lockpicking. Watergate, we had professors, we got money for God's sake. We got these people who brought a camera out of their hand for 10 minutes. You tell me that they put the lock and they go into Watergate, they put a piece of tape over the boat so they don't have to take it coming back out. A guard, who would not be following them back in 2.5 hours, he walks around, he opens the door up, there's tape on the lock.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Sin.